Blog Talk Radio.
October 29th, 2019. The call-in number is 347-857-3293. Justice begins and ends with education and educational institutions. What's happening with WBAI? Meeting to save WBAI Wednesday, October 30th, 2019, 6 to 9 p.m. DC 37, 125th Barclays Street, north near West Street at 140th Park Place, room 200. Join the liberation struggle. Stay informed.
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. This is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening. And as we always begin, we begin with reality, the truth of reality, and the way I know best to say it. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our laborers for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. And the lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes, who once protected us in our community, do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up, now is the time. And every week we go through the same thing. There is so much happening, and if you can't put it in a slot where it belongs in terms of reality, how it fits in our oppression, it's crazy making. So many of our people have been driven crazy because they don't know where the acts, the things that are happening, where they fit in our existence. And one of the things that I want to remind people of the reality of this program and what is on the news today. And what we have here is with the death of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, Trump seems to have satisfied American bloodlust. With the death of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, Trump seems to have satisfied American bloodlust. And I'm talking about Democrats, Republicans, libertarians, and whatever you have. This has become the biggest news. Killed Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. But let me be clear. Let me give you a truth to understand. Resistance to any injustice is as constant as injustice. Let me say it again. Resistance to any injustice is as constant as any injustice. Now, last week, we talked for a moment about President Trump's dealings, thievery around the world. And my question is Mr. Trump's thievery any different than Mr. Bush's family's thievery? Is it any different than using the presidency and high office as Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton's thievery? I remind people of the money that was to go to Haiti for the troubles they had there. The worldwide monies went there, and the Haitian people are still in trouble. Where's the money? But we're very upset about Mr. Trump and the things that he's doing, but we're not so upset about other people's dealings. Mr. Biden and his son. What about that? And every president, starting with George Washington, getting all of the land. They knew the importance of land and money in capitalism. The wealthy understand it, but the poor don't. I think of the poor young men who went to Vietnam talking about, I served my country, I defended my country, and I say, no, you didn't. You defended the corporations in your country, and now they don't even want to take care of you, the damages that happened to you in the war. When you went to Iraq, you didn't go to Iraq for the American people. You went to Iraq for the corporations who were making millions and are making millions. Plane loads of money disappeared, and they say it contribute to the funds of the American veterans who came home. And I'm saying, wait a minute, where did all of that money go? Stop saying that. Recognize reality. And what are we doing now, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi? What is he all about? Well, briefly, during the Ottoman Turk control of that part of the world, World War One, they divided it up, and they divided it up into economic blocks. They called them religious blocks. They broke up everything for money to serve the Europeans and the Americans. And there is struggle over that. And they're still struggling, but I remember Mr. Trump saying, well, we're getting out of Syria, we got the oil wells. Let everybody take care of themselves. And I remember what Lynn Stewart said a long time ago. She says, you have to be careful making an allegiance or making an alliance with a capitalist country, because capitalism is very adroit and adept at doing whatever is best with capitalism at the time. And if you just happen to get in the way of what the capitalists are doing to make a buck, you, my friend, are in trouble. You, my friend, are abandoned. Capitalism is very adept at doing what's best for capitalism at any given situation. And I just, it's sickening to watch the media talk about the death of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. And Trump loves saying how he was cowering and running. And it was the same thing with Osama bin Laden. They just love to say it. And I just look at them and say, I don't know what's wrong with American bloodlust. I love boxing. I got some bloodlust in me. I love that sport. The thing I hate about it is the corruption when they use people who are outclassed just to watch them get beaten. But that's another story. But so as to put us back on another level, we have to talk about the updates on our political prisoners, and we have people talking about that. But when they broke up the Ottoman Empire and they divided it for money, there are old scores that people want to settle. As the Vietnamese said, any price getting Americans out of Vietnam, there will be people saying any price to get the Europeans and Americans out of their land, and then the struggle will continue. Without further ado, I'm looking at the lines. They're lit up, and 8728, which we have missed for a couple of weeks, 8728, your microphone is open. 8728, let me open up that mic if I can get to it. Is done. Let's hear your words of wisdom. 8728.
You hear me, Ralph?
We hear you loud and clear.
Okay. What does it mean to be working class? Is that something from out of the past? Do we always got to come in last? That's the question I'm going to ask. What does it mean to be working class? Because today you say you're middle class. You can't pay the doctor. Your car needs gas. You're still paying off your college class. What you owe your credit card is never passed. Still you're middle class this and middle class that. Upper lower middle class till you eat your hat, got the gap on your back. You got a little fat. You're still paying for the chair where you just sat. Is it all over just like that? Who stole the good life? Where's it at? Or was middle class just a little dream made up for you on your TV screen where everybody's comfy or so it seems, and no one ever eats rice and beans? Because in the beginning, there was just two classes. There was the elite and there was the masses. We did the work. They kicked our asses. Most everything passes. There are still two classes, those who got it and those who don't. We think we're going to get it, but really we won't. Those who own the companies and make the big deals, every deal could cost you a meal, and for real, not too many people hold the power. They make $1 million while they take a shower. There's the owning class and the working class. Where are you at? Are you slow or fast? All you got to do is do the math. If you got a job, you're working class. If you're out of a job, you're really working class. We build the houses, work the fields. We run the hospitals and fix the meals. We make the family and work at home. Sometimes that's the hardest work of all. We clean the office. We teach the kids. Everything around us is something we did. No matter what your color or your name, no matter the country from where you came, the name of the game is still the same. And if the owner works, is he working class? Got his laptop and smartphone? He's moving fast. It all depends. First and last, if he owns a bodega or a little machine shop, he works for his money, and he works a lot. He might be working for everything he got, but the guy who owns the corporation, he could work all day. It won't change him. He might be a nice guy. He might be a jerk. He makes his big money off of other people's work. You can't make millions going to work and getting paid. You need other people's work to really have it made. When we punch the clock, he owns the stock. We do the labor, but he gets the flavor. We make the honey, but he takes the money, because working people make everything. We're the ones make the cash register ring, and when our work goes to someone else's profit, now you got it, and you don't got to ask. That's what makes us working class. And if I talk about class just a little more, your TV says we're starting class war. But the real news has come and gone. The class war is always on. It has been here since the day you were born. We just need to know whose side we're on. If we don't know our own class, take it from the poet. We will always take a beating, and we won't even know it, because your TV is programmed by the owning class. Your newspaper programmed by the owning class. Your search engine programmed by the owning class. When we don't know we're working class, the owning class will kick our ass. They get a real free pass, because you get no health care, get lousy schools. The TV brings your kids up to act like fools. You get no union, you lose your job. You vote for politicians who think you're a slob, because we sometimes forget there's a bottom and a top, those who got it and those who do not. Better to remember and make no mistake, if you're not an owner, you're a worker, and that's the breaks. And I bet there's nobody listening here who made $10 million just this year. So before I waste any more breath, before I talk myself to death, let me ask you to act on a fact that has come to pass. Your ass is in the working class. And before we get to another day when we open our mouths with something to say, before you speak and the words are gone, it's good to know whose side you're on and what it means to be working class. Is that something from out of the past? Do we always gotta come in last? That's the question we got to ask. What does it mean to be working class? And one last little question before I'm gone. Tell me, whose side are you on?
All right, Professor Louis, I just love it. And it's education through poetry. And as Lynn Stewart said, the poets say it in a way that nobody else can. And you could understand it in a way. We are about education. I could hear that and play it 10,000 times. And I want you to just remember, you get your spirits uplifted, you get entertainment and education all in one, which is one breath, one mouthful. Thank you, Professor Louis, and we're going to have to keep up with where you are, where you're performing, because it is in educational and entertaining, and I remember at Riverside Church, you had the whole audience stomping and listening to your rap. Thanks again. Look forward to you giving us more information next week. And next up is 8416. Thank you, Professor Louis. 8416. You're in the house. Allow 8416. Your mic is open. Thank you. Tell us about yourself, Bilal, Republic of New Africa, New Orleans, when the things were happening, the call out for support for the people who were in trouble in New Orleans, the call out for support. And give us a little of your history, Bilal Sunni Ali.
Thank you very much, Ralph. A little bit of my history. A little bit of my history is that I was known as the Spirit of the Midnight Band when I performed with Gil Scott-Heron, Brian Jackson, and the Midnight Band. And we did liberation music. and we did music that supported, encouraged liberation fighters who are active on the front lines to continue to be active, and music that could raise money for them. In fact, that's what I did. If it wasn't for the fact that we are a people at war, I would probably be a full-time musician, and that's what I would do. But I've had to, gladly has served as a member of the Black Panther Party, as a government worker in the Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa, and also as a government worker in the United Negro Improvement Association, African Communities League, of which I'm currently serving as the ambassador, to Belize and the Central American region, to where I'm going in a few days. And being all that I've been has had me come in contact, personal contact, quite often with the brother we know as Imam Jamil Al-Amin, formerly known as H-Rap Brown. It's been over 50 years since I met him, and when I met him, it's the same thing going on now than that was going on then. He's being falsely accused of something. Right then, they were accusing him of fermenting violence because he was organizing people to vote, and organizing people to vote, people were getting killed. So he was telling people to defend themselves. So when you organize people to vote, you had to organize people to defend themselves too. So that's a little bit about me and a little bit about what I'm here to talk about in whatever time we can do that. But I appreciate being on the show, Ralph, and appreciate the great work that you do too in our struggle.
Well, thank you so much for that, Bilal. But one of the things I remember early on, and we're going way back 50 years, maybe 40 years, and I remember when little part of, I believe it was Mississippi, was raided by the federal government, and they had tanks, mm-hmm. and they came after the children, and they handcuffed your children, but the children's wrists were so small that the handcuffs fell off. And I remember meeting you and your wonderful wife who was passed, those soldiers who fought for all of the people, and the price they paid, and they are gone, and the young ones who have grown up, and your daughter, I believe she's a doctor now. It's a wonderful thing. Tell us a little about that at that moment in your life.
It's been a continuous moment. I mean, but the actual moment of the actual raid taking place I'd say again, it's been continuous because it keeps coming up, and the teachers wanting to know why Kofi behaves the way he does, and we tell them the story how getting up in the morning at not yet 4 years old, helping his grandfather collect wood, and all of a sudden, a tank pulls up in the driveway and starts ordering people from the tank. You know, you don't see no faces. Tank. And then they start ordering little children. They actually ordered him to come down off the porch where they was all lined up. And he wouldn't go. The reason he wouldn't go is because he's not used to taking orders from a tank, you know. He takes orders from those who are in authority over him. He's proud to say he's still a soldier. He's still a soldier. He works in the field of security. And the FBI even went, and the FBI has gone to his job and gotten him fired, or at least tried to get him fired, and said that they told a lie that he had 92 felonies. And here's a young man, 42 years old, with 92 felonies, who's been working in security for most of his adult life. And, you know, it's not even time for that type of lie, for that type of lie to be told. I mean, the control that the Homeland Security, that the apparatus, has over security firms at this point is that if they report something to you, you have to act on it with terminating or suspending that individual and work it out later. And so that's what had to happen. You know, he had to go through about 6 months without unemployment or without up to par employment and still try to support his family.
That's what I wanted.
Sorry for interrupting you.
Uh-huh. And I'm saying life of those who understand and work for the people continues. It's a continuous struggle. And I remember when you called when the troubles came down to New Orleans and you said, you know, get support down here. They're killing us. Mm-hmm. The bridges. Yep. The people are trying to save themselves. And the government, instead of helping, is killing. And it's just another example. When you were in Jackson, Mississippi, with Chukwe Lumumba, you know, like, and all of these struggles are continuous. And I understand you're on your way to Belize to do work in Belize to establish something. Give us a little bit about your program for Belize.
Yeah, what we're doing in Belize is establishing a healing arts academy. It's a healing arts center, but the main thing that we're doing is training people in the healing arts. We'll be continuing to train people in acupuncture, acupressure, and also we use music, but we use other forms of holistic healing modalities. We use Reiki, and primarily, above all, we use the diet. You know, how a person eats, where that food is grown, what it's grown for. That's the major focus of our entire healing program.
And if we can get a proper diet, if we can relate to people who understand that and teach us, if we are susceptible to learning, and I do want to take time, if I ever get time, to get down to Belize with you, where the growing, where the temperatures, where it is basic living, I want to do that and discuss and maybe learn something where I can help myself and others to eat properly. With that, could you give us contact information so we could get in touch with you? And I'm sure there are other people who are listening who would like to get to Belize. And as Kazi Torre says, get there and get close to the earth. Do a little work on the earth and build something, a place where we can all go to relax and work and learn. Give us your contact information, Valau.
I can be reached at spiritofaband@gmail.com. That's spiritofaband@gmail.com.
Okay, thank you so much for that. And we must go to the our consistent, our dear Ann Lamb, who is the heart of this program of supporting political prisoners. 4407. or 1-577. Your mic is open.
Hey, thank you so much, Ralph. Always an honor and a privilege to be on this program with you, and certainly great to hear from Bilal Sunni Ali, who has also done tremendous work in support of all of our political prisoners and usually is visiting at least one or two of them when he's here, which is wonderful. So I'm sure if Jaleel knew you were on the show, Bilal, he would be sending you his regards. So that would be the latest thing I would be talking about tonight. In case people don't already know, which I think all of us know, Jaleel went to the parole board and then had to wait 2 entire weeks to get, most horrible, complete unanimous denial of parole. I have the decision. He sent it to me. But that's like 3.5 pages of muckety-muck. I will be putting it up on our website, JerichoNY.org, so people can go and read it. Now, we have been doing back in May, we have been doing a campaign because Jaleel has already put in an application for commutation of sentence to time served, because obviously in all these years since 2002 that he's been going to the board, he has yet to have a really what anybody would consider a fair hearing, right? So we are going to be reinitiating that campaign. We'll be updating it with some of the latest news. It will be posted on JerichoNY.org. It will be posted on JerichoMovement.com. I would assume it would also be posted on his site. But just speaking for what I'll be doing, it'll be on JerichoNY.org. I'm waiting for a second letter from him because he had some specific extra things he wanted to put into that campaign brochure, things that have happened since then. But anyway, I'll read the letter I got from him on October 23rd. I won't read the entire thing. Some of it is about, you know, just personal things. But it says, "Dear Ann, as I mentioned over the phone, I am absolutely dismayed and numb from this decision. Having groveled to the point of moral exhaustion, it led to an absolute loss. When I told my mom that they denied my release, scheduled to see the board again in September 2020, they gave him a 1-year hit, she burst out crying. I imagine my daughter and family felt the same devastation. It was rumored prior to getting the decision that the parole board was going to deny my release, putting the ball back in the governor's court. But the Board of Parole was upset when he asked them to postpone the November 2018 hearing for his political ambition, because he was supposed to first go to the board in September of 2018, then they asked him to postpone it until October, then they asked him to postpone it until after the elections in November 2018, okay? And so now the parole board intends to make a decision in respect to my release. So it seems they want to put the ball back in Cuomo's court, all right? Therefore, I'm asking friends and supporters to reinitiate the call, tweet, text, email campaign directed at Governor Cuomo's office demanding to answer my application to commute the sentence to time served. We know that in the next 60 days, he will be issuing pardons, clemency, and commutations. Therefore, we need to demand he grants my application. Well, I'm sure everyone across the country that knows about my fight for freedom and supports me is equally dismayed by this decision. Certainly, this is a case in New York City and New York State, hence the need to make this call of action. We need to work across diverse political positions and class identities in order to be successful. We need to call all progressives to unite in this fight for freedom. Everyone needs to take a position on the urgency of the matter, that we have 60 days to create a tsunami of resistance opposing this parole denial and demand Governor Cuomo use his executive authority and order my immediate release from prison. I'm enclosing a copy of the convoluted reasoning of the parole board denying my release. And believe me, it is convoluted. I read that thing 5 times and I'm still saying this does not make any sense, right? So it really is convoluted. And it should, of course, be posted on the website with calls to action, all of which I will be doing. So just to let people know, of course, you know, this weekend, it will be good to have it down in D.C., of course, and we will have it with us. And by then, it will be posted on all the websites and everything else. I'm just waiting because he called me this morning, Jaleel did, and he said that he had sent me a second letter. And did I get it yet? Well, it didn't come today. I just checked the mail on my way upstairs. Not. So hopefully it will come tomorrow, because tomorrow's already Wednesday, and I want to get this thing together, you know, for the weekend, for Black is Back. But, you know, very unfortunate. Now, I can tell you right now, his mother is no longer crying. His mother is furious. His mother has been texting me, you know, don't forget to talk about, you know, Judy Clark, okay? He did grant clemency to Judy Clark. The governor did.
John,
you know.
And we love it, granted clemency to Judy Clark. But to our eternal shame that this brother who supported our community while the army of occupation continues killing people throughout
exactly.
this country, and the judges are hugging the killers and they're excusing the killers and
exactly.
the families excusing the army of occupation. We shall stop excusing ourselves. And let me tell you, I must say this. If we don't deal with these Democrats, and I
exactly.
am to the point I will vote and encourage people to vote for those racist, hateful Republicans of the lesser and the less effective of the two evils, if we don't demand for our support on the local and state and the national level, if they don't support us, we must be their enemy. We must not just sit aside. We must say, we're putting you out of business. Jaleel, all of our political prisoners, Sundiata.
Yes.
What's the call? Free them all, Mumia.
Yes.
If we don't
Matulu.
Put that, I'm sick of Sharp
you know?
James Syndrome.
Don't forget
Corey.
Jim Fitzgerald and Michelle McGee. All right, the longest-held political prisoner in the world, Michelle McGee. All right, Rochelle McGee, down since 1963. All right, followed by
yes.
Chip Fitzgerald, down since 1969, the longest-held Black Panther political prisoner, followed by Ed Poindexter.
Oh, great.
Followed by Jaleel. All right, so we got a whole bunch of very long-term political prisoners in this country, which denies that it has political prisoners, right?
Yes,
so,
and,
you know,
and
we
I
got
remember
major
when Lynn got
just to, exactly
when Lynn got out
work around political prisoners.
When Lynn was freed from the death camps and she had restrictions on her, the wonderful thing was being with her. And however, those political prisoners got her number and they would call, and it was just wonderful moment. It broke the rules, but Lynn was a rule breaker, and she would speak to Chip Fitzgerald. It was a wonderful moment. And this morning, I got an email from Patricia Clark, a young woman who was been to jail ever since she was 17 years old, and had spent over 20 years. And Lynn met her at Carswell Medical Center, and she did work for her, and they took Lynn's privileges, her phone privileges, her commissary privileges, etc., for helping this young woman. And she sent a letter this morning and said, I am in ICE custody, and they're sending me back to Jamaica. I'm free. Thank you. Lynn had done work and paperwork, you know, for Patricia Clark. Patricia Clark's
That's
on
great.
Her way home. Lynn is alive and with us, and we must continue this struggle. All of our brothers and sisters must be home, or we will
yes.
be damned in history. Well, thank you so much for that. And Ann Lamb, our political prisoner emissary, and I'm going to have to go on to 8672, your mic is open. 8672. Joe Myers, your mic is open.
Joe.
His mic is not open. 6722, we've had that. Let's move on.
Open.
6574, your mic is open. Eight six seven two, your mic is open.
Oh yes,
Joel.
Yes. Well, I went to grab my phone. It didn't do it correctly, and therefore I accidentally hung up. So I'm back, and I want to say that this is a you were talking before about this whole thing with Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi and this bloodlust that all of a sudden the everybody is overjoyed at this death of somebody who is basically largely set up by the whole political imperialist turmoil that's been created, especially in the Middle East. And let's not forget about the support for the ethnic cleansing state of sometimes called Israel. I prefer to call it the Zionist entity, in whose neighborhood that is, and whose open strategy, as discussed in their own media and so on, is to break up all of the surrounding nation states into feuding enclaves that would, you know, the whole divide and conquer strategy writ large, and with the support of the United States doing a cannonball dive into that pool. And the United States had, until a few weeks ago, it had troops in Syria in the name of all kinds of other things. But who started that entire war? Who tried to overthrow the elected government of Syria? That was, well, you could look at some of the photographs. You could see John McCain and, at that time, his friend Lindsey Graham handing out arms to people that were being bought off as mercenaries to topple the Syrian government, just as they did with the Libyan government before that, with Mr. Gaddafi, and whom they cruelly murdered after capturing him on a multinational imperialist onslaught. And then it was on to Syria, with many of the same mercenaries moved from one place to another. So they stirred up a war that has cost tens of thousands, maybe going into hundreds of thousands of lives. And then they part of that war, they were aligned really with ISIS. And they, in fact, brought together ISIS. A lot of those guns went to ISIS, and a whole oil market was opened up by the major powers in order to launder the funding of ISIS. But there was a fake disassociation, because they tried to make you think that ISIS were extreme opponents of the U.S., Israeli, British Empire alliance. And therefore, because that was the propaganda and that was the image that was created in the media, exactly the opposite, they were able to build up this bloodlust for killing somebody who had actually been working with and for them and had been funded for them by them, but which the propaganda said otherwise. So, and they talked about how he was supposedly cowardly in his last minutes. I don't know how they would be in their last minutes. And they talked about these brave American troops who apparently didn't lose one casualty, totally outnumbered, probably was what was an unarmed group of people, and just came in there and shot them all up. Yes, brave heroes they were, and those who stood up to them against tremendous odds, to whatever degree, or who were scapegoated in spite of the fact that they had been bought off by them to some degree, presented as another jackpot. Now, if you read the New York Times editorial that's supposed to represent some kind of excellence in the world, they criticized the raid as being basically, this was in yesterday or the day before New York Times, as being covering up the fact that the U.S. was pulling its troops out while Assad is still in power. That is, the Ba'ath Socialist Party and the elected government in Syria that they had tried to overthrow using whatever grievances anyone had anywhere and whatever willingness people had to accept the pay that mercenaries can get. They organized this whole campaign. They failed to overthrow him. And the pulling out of the American troops in a certain way represents the end of that war. And they see that, they think it should actually continue. And they related this in the same editorial with supposedly a softness on Russia in the Ukraine and Korea. In other words, everything that was chilling out, even a Cold War, which they seem to speak in favor of provocations to fan it up into a World War III, this was the direction that the criticism was coming from the New York Times and the Washington Post, and by implication, this whole group that that we call liberals, supposedly as a relatively favorable term. But the things have changed around, and what they're all in favor of is the operating an imperialist capitalist system around the world, which is Robin Hood in reverse, steals from the poor to give to the rich. Or I think I said last week, like in the Bible says that there's that passage where it says that to those who have, even more shall be given. And to those who have not, even what little they have shall be taken away, including their lives, their family structure, the ground from under their feet, their country, their nation, everything else is being taken away, although people are fighting back. And if you take a long view of what's happened in history, inevitably winning, but having to pay a tremendous price for each for each victory and for each resistance to the escalation of the aggression. And what's beginning to happen today is a certain hysteria on the part of the ruling class that what they once considered the bastions of mighty industry and military power is beginning to crumble and to pass away by the dynamic of their own system, because those countries that they exploited for cheap labor and so on have undergone revolutions. People have, and even though they're still making deals, many of these oppressed countries are coming into their own with a degree of at least being in the middle. And in the case of some countries, like China, is coming into a leading role and getting ahead of the old imperialist powers. And that also goes for developing alliance with Russia, another country that in the last century ushered in a gigantic amount of revolution around the world, which, while it was following somewhat of the socialist program, was contributing a great deal to the liberation struggles against imperialism, which have weakened it to a great degree and had driven it to the point of desperation. And the problem is that domestically, what has been identified as the liberals, we shouldn't forget that the history of the Democratic Party is the party that bribed populations to go into one war after another. And ever since World War I, World War II, Vietnam, Korea, a lot of that was instigated by the Democratic Party, whose liberalism basically was to get the population to have confidence that this government is worthy of support, that you can go around the world and mass murder people because, oh, you got a new deal, or, oh, you got this concession or that concession. So that means that now you could show everybody else how it's done. That is how mass murder is done, which was we can't forget it. It's in the DNA. It's in the history of this country. It was born largely out of mass murder of the native peoples and the enslavement of the African peoples. And that's what created so much of the capital, by converting all the land of this country, which was just the land that people walked on, into capital. And then the profits that were sweated out of genocidal racial slavery, which fueled the development of capitalism, not in the United States, only in the United States, but in Europe and around the world.
That's a fantastic history lesson, Joel. And we have to hear that over and over again. This is what America is based on. When people talk about capitalism, that's what they are talking about. The first three presidents of the United States, starting with George Washington, when the issue of freedom came to the Western Hemisphere with the struggles in Haiti, you said anybody can join our struggle and be an equal partner. George Washington and the rest sent their own personal money to stop that concept. And so let us remember that. We'll come back to that again, Joel. We must learn history and understand what capitalism and imperialism is all about. It's about enslavement, taking other people's resources. The next person is going to speak about right here at home, 1-885. Give us some information. Sister Shirley, talk to us.
Hi, I'm sorry. I was so busy in my abode. I just got away from me, so I don't even know what the topic is. So I would prefer to just listen, and I do agree. What he stated, what little did I got, it needs to be said over and over and over again, and it needs to be spread around by all of us.
Okay, Sister, thank you so much for that. And let's go to another stalwart who understands what we are talking about. 8367, your mic is open. Give us information and education. Tom Syracuse of the Green Party. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, I'm sorry that I got on the blog so late, but unfortunately I fell asleep.
The information that you
have. I fell asleep around 8:30, and I didn't wake up until just a few minutes ago. So I missed most of the program. I just have one thing to say about capitalism and imperialism. Capitalism cannot maintain itself without imperialism.
That's right.
And yet imperialism itself has the seeds of sows the seeds of the destruction of capitalism. It's one of the huge contradictions, paradoxes within capitalism. Capitalism has its own contradictions, and it eventually destroys itself. And imperialism is one of those things that actually it cannot Capitalism cannot exist without imperialism, and yet imperialism can actually hasten the destruction of capitalism because of this, as Joel Myers pointed out, all of these other competitive capitalist countries are, they're trying to outdo each other. The, of course, the tragedy of all of this is that the working class, the ordinary people in these countries, they have to bear the brunt of this violent, destructive process that's going on in the world today.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for that, Tom. But is the program open with Professor Louis talking about whose side you're on? We were talking about capitalism, and he really puts it right in front of you. What does it all mean? And it is important also that we know the history of capitalism, as Joel talks about the destruction of the indigenous people for money, for capitalism. And to get that information out there, that is a war in itself, a war of information. And one of the organizations or institutions nationally, as well as internationally, and specifically in New York City, is WBAI. It was a station and should continue to be a station that deals with what's on the ground in our neighborhood. And there are so many instances where that radio station was very important, and the instantaneous contact with the people as to what is happening on the ground. And I remember one of the injustices that was taking place in New York when one of the attorney families, Reef Warren and his wife were interceding right on behalf of one of the people in the community when the police were beating them. The police arrested them, and I'll never forget it. I was upstate New York when I got the phone call, and it was everybody out. And in that instance, WBAI was able to put people on the street and go to the police station and confront the police. And it has happened in the Central Park Five. It happened in Larry Davis. It happened in all of our resistance struggles. We had a media that would tell the truth, was in contact with the people, and could get something done. And we are involved in trying to save WBAI. We had a great event week to fundraise, and so we all have to get involved. Save WBAI. We must improve what has happened over the last year and a half, and there's a meeting to save WBAI Wednesday, October 30th, 6 to 9 p.m. at DC 37, 125 Barclay Street, near West Street, at 140 Park Place, room 200. It's on the second floor. And everyone should be there. And if anyone has anything to add to that, this is a station that brings the news and the information and the events where we protect our community, our neighborhood, our city, and brings out the truth in what is happening. And so if there's someone else would like to add to that.
Well, Ralph, WBAI, is it still it's still off the air, right? It's still controlled by this rogue group coming out of California?
You're right. It is controlled by a rump group, and I would like to discuss where that word comes from. Out of California with national news, we And I'm not being, yes, I am being a New York chauvinist. This is the center of the world of information. And I remember when our dear sister Lynn was in Fort Worth, Texas, and I says, I'm going to stay there and so that I can visit you at every opportunity. And she says, no, get back to New York where the media is and about issues. And so we're...
I wish I could share all the love.